Sue, I was at English National Opera for pleasure, for a change, which is nice, seeing Madame Butterfly in that wonderful Graham Vick production. And there you were. I was completely blown away by you. It was not just the singing, it was the level of engagement. And by no stretch of the imagination could you ever be a 15-year-old Japanese girl, but my goodness, you suspended disbelief totally on that occasion. Butterfly is one of those roles that's not just a big sing, but it's a very comprehensive sing. There are so many elements to it. And at that time, that was the repertoire that you were at English National Opera singing. Tell us, was that occasion as special for you as it was for me?
It was very special for many reasons, partly because, first of all, I really wasn't expecting to do the part. I'd asked, as I was a member of the company, if I could understudy Cho-Cho-San, because it was a repertoire I was interested into moving towards and looking at. And on the day of the Zitzprobe, when the orchestra and the singers get together without any staging, and I breezed in with my cup of coffee at 20 past 10 to be told, "You're on." So it was a huge surprise, and I had very little time to put it together. But working with Graham Vick was incredible, and the intensity, which he, you know, the levels of intensity that he works at, and also he gets out of you. I would be there sort of weeping and wailing. He'd say, "No, no, there's more, there's more, there's more." So it was a huge turning point for me, not only musically, vocally, but also dramatically as an actress.
Did singing always come first, or were you one of those people that started out in music with piano lessons and then graduated as singer?
No, I started off as a pianist from a little girl, from about 8 years of age, and the singing happened because I was in the school choir and I had a kind of a loud voice, if you like, or I could sing. I was an alto because I could sing harmony, and I'd get the odd solo, and I really enjoyed it, but I never thought of it as something that I would do. And then when I was in the sixth form, I wanted to go to the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester to their Saturday morning school. And I had to have two instruments, and I didn't have two instruments, I had piano. And my brother, who's a musician, said, "Well, look, you can sing in tune." So I learned a couple of songs, and I went along and sang them, and they asked me to go back after lunch and sing them again to Alexander Young, who was a very famous English tenor, who was then the head of the senior college vocal department. And he said immediately, "I think you should really seriously consider singing lessons."
It's amazing how often this happens with people who go and they're looking for a second study.
Yes.
And you came from a very normal background.
Absolutely.
That's the other misconception about opera.
Yes. No, my parents were, my father was a policeman. In fact, my mother was a policewoman. They met in
Crewe. No wonder you've been on the straight and narrow.
Absolutely. And they met when they were training in Crewe. My mother was from North Wales, and her father used to drive the trains up Snowdon, and my dad was a Lancashire lad, one of a family of nine. And there was no great sort of academic or musical tradition. The Welsh side of my mother's family all sang in the choirs and in the bands, as everybody did in those days in the villages, and my granny had a beautiful voice, but there were no professional musicians.
The repertoire at that time all pointed to lyric soprano with a bit of muscle, and the Italian repertoire that I know you loved and still do love. In fact, I think you're all set to do Minnie in Fanciulla del West,
yes.
Girl of the Golden West, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes, yes.
Having done it in concert already.
That's right, in Edinburgh last year.
That repertoire was, did you think that would continue to be the centre of your universe?
Well, to be honest with you, I never really planned any of it. In those years at the ENO, I was very lucky in that I was guided very well into the way that my voice was going. And I would do a role, and then the powers that be and the the coaches would all say, yeah, but did you hear that? The sound that came from there. So that sound in Tatiana, now that could be a Yanufa sound. And so I just went along. I went with the flow and took things that came my way. Things like the Janáceks and Peter Grimes, those sort of things came along. And all of those things pointed to more complex dramatic characters.
There were some pretty left-field things as well, like the Dalla Piccolo you did at ENO, The Prisoner, and also Menotti's The Consul, which is a really interesting piece, an all-out assault on political oppression and bureaucracy, and which climaxes in a meltdown for the soprano, which can and should, and did in your case, completely stop the show.
Waiting! Waiting! Waiting, 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 waiting.
An amazing experience because it was the lovely late lamented Richard Hickox who was doing it in Spoleto in Italy with Menotti, because Richard was at that point the musical director of the festival. He suggested me to Giancarlo, and I went and sang to him in Richard's house in Islington, and I got the job. And it was just an amazing experience just to do the audition, to be 4 feet away from the man who wrote this music, but then to spend 3 or 4 weeks with him rehearsing and spending time privately with him as well, and him telling me how this character evolved and how it came into his mind, and all his personal story, which was fascinating, about how he was sent from Italy to New York and went to college and as a young virtuoso, and the people he met along the way at the immigration, and they all feature in The Consul. And then when we did it in Spoleto, in this tiny little theatre with not a lot of money to throw around at sets. So it was a real lesson in having to act really well, because there was nothing to kind of support you in terms of scenery and flash costumes or anything. And to have Menotti there, you know, was just incredible. And the reaction was wild. I didn't quite know what to do, actually. I stood there and thought, what do you do in these situations? Do you sort of just say stop clapping, or, you know, I didn't know what to do. I stood there and people were screaming and yelling, and he was at the side of the stage with tears pouring down his face, and you've stopped my opera, he said. It was fantastic.
I've always felt that you were a complete natural on stage, and the two don't always go together. I mean, you can get some fabulous singers who really struggle with being on stage. And I think the point about you is that the technique is not what it's about. It's not visible, the acting technique. What it is about what's inside, is about feeling what this person is thinking and experiencing. And that's what comes across with you.
I think for me, this probably sounds sort of sacrilegious thing to say, but the singing almost comes second in a way, because actually I'm not bothered about always making the most beautiful sound vocally, because sometimes, especially in the roles I do, the text and the feelings and the plot don't call for that. I mean, you cannot sing with a beautiful silvery creamy tone the words of Electra's monologue, you know, dancing on people's graves. I mean, it doesn't call for that. So for me, the first reaction I have when I look at a role is, can I identify with this person? Can I feel myself becoming this person? And then, I look at the notes and think, well, you know, can I sing the note? Actually physically sing the notes? Is there anything in there that's too scary for words?
But it's interesting that's the order it happens in.
That's the order in which it happens.
So let's talk about this big transition, if you like. I mean, you've already established with us that, you know, everything has kind of has had no plan, that it's kind of been a natural evolution, if you like. So the arrival at these big dramatic soprano roles, how did that begin? I mean, what was the first indication? Because, you know, there are people out there who still think that a soprano is a soprano is a soprano, and there's so many different...
Absolutely. I think the turning point to get into this repertoire that I'm in now was actually Garsington Opera, when they were doing a big Strauss series and they wanted to do the Ägyptische Helena.
Yes.
And I was asked to do that. And of course, you know, I looked at the score and thought, good grief, this takes hours, you know. It was twice as long as the stuff I was doing. And she seemed to be, when you get the old coloured pencil out to underline your part, you know, I virtually went through a magic marker underlining the role of Helen. She was on the stage the whole time. And I thought, well, you know, I'll give it a go. And at the end of the day, I'm not doing it at the Met for the first time or something. You know, if it's a disaster, I can creep away into the bushes of Garsington and hide for a few weeks and then I can come back out and face the world. But that opened up a lot of interest from other people. People were coming up saying, have you thought about singing Wagner? Have you thought about doing more Strauss? And I said, well, not really, no, but now I've sung this, maybe I should. And then it was Keith Warner who called me and said, I want you to look at Brynhilde because I'm doing a ring in Tokyo. So I went off and got the scores and started looking at them with Philip Thomas and Lionel Friend, coaches that I trust and value their opinion, and they all said, well, you know, we think you could do this. I've worked with for 25 years, Philip Thomas, he gave me the best advice ever when we first started looking at this stuff, and he said, I just want you to remember one thing, it's not Wagner that ruins singers, it's singers that ruin Wagner, which was such a good piece of advice. You know, if you follow every marking in the score, and they are meticulous, he is absolutely meticulous about his markings, it's not all loud, it's not all screaming. Some of it's like chamber music or like Lieder, and that's what makes the bigger moments more exciting. So if you go to a performance of 5 hours of a piece of Wagner and you screamed out from start to finish, well, I for one would lose interest. But if actually the singers take the time and the conductor and everybody works together to actually look at the huge range of emotion and colour,
it's like
then it's, you yes. know, it's an interesting piece, you
absolutely
know?
And with Brunhilde, I mean, you know, people always go on about the battle cries, but actually so much of that role is in the middle of the voice,
yeah,
isn't it? And,
yeah.
and that's where the screamers have a problem.
A lot of it is very intimate, and especially in the Walküre, you know, when she's with her father and they're alone, that could be armchair theatre in a way, because it's just two very wounded and vulnerable people talking to each other and trying to be honest and not really succeeding. And it's nothing to do with standing on the stage and facing the front and howling, really.
At last you're singing Brunhilde at Covent Garden.
Oh, exciting,
yes.
Year.
So how wonderful to have had the range of experience you've had in the role now.
Yes.
And
yeah.
to come to that theatre.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
In your home country.
Yeah. It's a big moment. It's lovely to bring something that is like an old friend, but then to look at it in a new production, you know, with new colleagues, and that always adds something else to the mix, and you'll think about it completely differently again, because that's what happens with new people. You know, they give you something else to think about.
Talk about Elektra, because it was another big moment, and that Covent Garden night was one you won't forget in a hurry.
Oh.
What fascinated me was the role had always been exciting, the opera had always been exciting to me, but I was never moved by her. I've never been moved by her until you did it.
Oh gosh.
And it was all around that recognition scene with Orestes. And those few moments in that scene, to me, were the whole core of the performance.
Well, it's an amazing moment for her, because until that point, you know, you're seeing maybe just one side of this person who is hell-bent on getting revenge, but she's underneath it so damaged and so needy and vulnerable. And just the music when she says, Orest, when she realises it's him. Music is like a representation of a breakdown to me. Mm. You know, there is, to me, there's no other way to react than to just kind of collapse and sob, and everything she's kept inside her for all these years has to come out because suddenly she feels safe, because there's somebody else to share it with her.
Yes.
And everything she's hoped for now might come true, but she hasn't got to do it on her own anymore. And it's just this huge build-up and the pent-up feelings and then the release.
But I can see while you're talking about it, you're getting quite emotional.
And every time I hear it, it does it. I've done Electra, over 70 times now, more. And every time I hear that with the orchestra, it kicks me right in the guts.
Strauss is sometimes accused of missing that human core that Wagner had, but
goodness, he didn't miss it in this. Absolutely not.
There's a very funny story that Mark Elder, who was your conductor on that occasion, tells about some famous, you know, pre or post war Electra, and I can't remember who it was, but at the dress rehearsal, she came in through the back set and tumbled down the steps, and everybody rushed on and said, "My goodness, are you all right? Are you okay?" And she looked up and she said, "Oh, I always do that." She said, "It's for my public. They adore it." Now, that's the image of opera that
we don't want that. No.
We need to rid ourselves of that forever.
Maybe I'll bring in a somersault to the next thing I do or something. My famous cartwheel, yet to be seen.
Of course, helping you achieve all this in terms of depth of character are the directors you work with. You're meeting new people all the time. You must be very apprehensive about that. Or I know your game, you always go in with a completely open mind. And I think that's important. But have you come across people that you just thought, I'm never going to understand what they're thinking?
Oh, yeah. And I think the most important thing is to establish on day one a very open sort of two-way traffic. If you can't make that work, then you're in big trouble.
Coming up, you've got Elizabeth I in Britain's Gloriana.
Yes.
I mean, what a year this is for your Covent Garden.
Absolutely wild, yeah. That's going to be amazing. I mean, that's a Richard Jones production, so, you know, fasten your seatbelts, who knows really what's going to happen there. I've got a lot of stuff with Richard the next couple of years, which is going to be interesting.
Because he's doing the Girl of the Golden West.
Yeah,
as
and
well,
also I'm doing a new Macropolis case with him in Frankfurt.
The 337-year-old
Absolutely,
Amelia Martin.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a fascinating, fascinating
How
case.
How on earth do you start that? I don't know. That's a magical mystery tour.
Now, there's the little matter of the last night of the proms,
no.
which is imminent. And, I mean, we're having a snatch of Brunhilde, but also you have to do your Rule Britannia. And a couple of Rodgers and the Hammerstein anthems we're getting this year.
Yes, I'm looking forward to all of it, obviously. But I love the Rodgers and Hammerstein because one of my earlier loves was doing Friday night is music night. I did it for many, many years. And I love the fact that in the same programme you could sing a medley from Annie Get Your Gun and the Liebestod, you know, and that actually did happen. And then, of course, Rule Britannia. So there we go.
That's and you're known for your comedy touches.
More than for my coloratura. So there we go. I think the comedy might win on this occasion.
So do we get any clues about the dress? Because everybody makes a statement with this number.
Well, if I tell you this much, that this morning I was sending information to the BBC, which had to be then passed on to health and safety, let's leave it at that for now. Okay. It may all come to dust, of course, because we watch this space. Hopefully it'll be a bit of fun anyway.
I suppose you could say that nice frocks are not usually associated with the kind of roles you...
No, I never get a decent frock. No.
It's a surreal business, and you've probably got engagements written in now for how far ahead?
Gosh, for another 3 or 4 years, yes. So
it's quite extraordinary.
A new ring in Australia and, yeah, lots of stuff.
Amazing. There are no shortcuts, as you were indicating just now. But what advice would you give and do you give to young singers that come by you?
I think the first and the most important thing is do not show up to a rehearsal on the first day not knowing what the words mean. I mean, it sounds an awful thing to say, but people do. And how can you possibly enter into a character if you don't know what you're saying, let alone what anybody else is saying to you? So my advice is to always research the role as much as you can. Make sure you know every word that you're singing, every word that everybody else is singing, so that you're not holding people up in rehearsals by saying, oh, I'm sorry, I haven't quite got this right yet, and, you know, I can't remember it. And, of course, we all forget stuff once you get into a production and, you know, other things take over and then it all comes back together. But preparation, preparation, preparation.